Blog Talk Radio.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC radio network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures, and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
Away, away, away. We are here.
Yes. Totally, and live, and totally with a working system. I'm excited.
Yeah. So I am Deborah Voith, and I am here with Elvira Love and Nagashiva Ironwood. And for this month's theme of gratitude for the dead, tonight we will be talking about the deity Anubis. But first, we're going to, you know, just start out with just talking about, like, what we've been up to over the last week or so, and then kind of get into it. But, I feel a little discombobulated. Not too bad, but just the energy has been really crazy, as probably most people might have, you know, been feeling that. And you know, I am actually looking for things to be grateful for. And one of the things I'm really grateful for is the end of the onslaught of political ads. I'm just like, yes, yes. I was able to open things up and stuff and not have to, you know, go through that. So I was very excited about that.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So, you know, the energy's been really crazy and chaotic. And I actually felt like Samhain, you know, kind of, and Samhain's my favorite holiday, I think. And it kind of, I mean, I still celebrated it. I still, my friend Jordan, who owns Materia Magica, asked me to host the seance, and we had a really good time. It went well. That was on October 31st, and we had 13 people there, which is kind of interesting that it just naturally ended up being 13. And we had a real good time. We did like a spirit circle of kind of like doing mental mediumship first, and then we went into working on the Ouija board. And it went well. I really enjoyed it. Samhain felt a little different to me this year, and I think it was probably because there was like so much scattered political energy going around. And you know, I see, you know, a lot of people are having reactions and that are kind of all over the place. And I just really liked what my friend Laura L, who is also a podcaster. I really loved what she posted on Facebook earlier, and she had this little thing that said, "I choose not to participate in the collective hate and fear. Instead, I will send peace, love, and healing energy to all." And she added, her comment on the top was something like, "and with a little sprinkle of fairy dust." And I thought, oh, that's just, you know, that's what a sweet thought. So I liked that one. I had to take note of that one. But otherwise, you know, just, you know, I've just been doing the regular you know, while doing some mundane stuff, like the very important self-care appointments with doctor and dentist and stuff like that, and also, you know, doing readings and candle reports for clients. And it was kind of interesting lately that I noticed I've gotten a slight uptick in burning candles with people from the UK, which isn't too unusual, but also a few people from Italy, and that I have not had before, and so I had to use the translator to see, like, what the intentions were and stuff.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And, yeah, so it just, yeah, but otherwise, I mean, if I stay grounded and I just realize, okay, I woke up into a new day, and it's like, what, you know, I'm starting to look at what is truly, like, different in my world, like, right now, because I can only deal with right now, this minute. And it's like, you know what, there's really nothing that's different right now. And so I'm just going to, you know, continue on for today, and we'll see what, you know, tomorrow brings. So how about you, Elvira? How have you been doing during this chaotic time?
Well, we've had our it's, what can I say, we kind of go with the same theme. It's like Samhain, Halloween. I was mentioning before the show on a more mundane way is that I found that, you know, trick-or-treating was different. It was less interactive. There was less people with, you know, stuff out or even candy or any of that. And I do know, you know, it's economics is another, you know, thing that's facing a lot of people. But you're right. It didn't feel, it felt disjointed. And even though it is a time between, you know, worlds and situations, it wasn't the same energy because it felt like this physical plane was disjointed. It had nothing to do with being somewhere and feeling the other world and having that shift feel, you know, like I'm in, you know, this world, but I'm also in that world over there. So yeah, it did. And fascinating enough is that the weather, I don't even care anymore about, you know, the idea that we have climate change or how did it happen or was it really just the way it is or, you know, yabba, yabba, yabba. it was, we wound up literally on Monday morning, we wound up having what was, they were saying severe storm.
Oh.
And so going from through Monday, you know, it was, they had to close the polls. Some, they were still doing early voting. They closed the polls. The kids were in school when we had basically a tornado watch, and then it went into a tornado warning, and that means you find safe space. And so they had kids on buses that stopped at different schools
shelter,
that, you know, like they leave their school and then they stop, they're on the route to dropping the kids off. But if there's another school, they stop the school and they took the kids off the bus and got them into the safe spaces. And it did, because the winds were so erratic and what they call the wind shear, I'm getting to know meteorological talk, would create these things. And, you know, you could see the way it would start to spin because they would even show you some of what they saw, but it wouldn't necessarily touch down. It wouldn't form. It would then dissolve.
Yeah.
But they didn't know it was going to do that. So they were, you know, having, well, one finally did. And it didn't drop onto the ground like the one that, or the situation that happened in April here, but it did go over enough that it destroyed some things. And so it was a, and that was right before, you know, the voting. And I just thought of this as being really kind of weird. And so, you know, by the time I got to that day, I'd already early voted. But I sat home with my dogs because they were devastated because the thunder here and lightning, but the thunder is like, it's nothing like California. Let's just put it this way.
Maybe
you're in the high mountains. It was the kind that shook the house. I mean, it shook it. You could feel the whole house shaking. And so I decided it was probably a good thing. And I basically would not listen to things that were on the television for a lot of reasons. I was mm-hmm. trying to reorganize myself and stay in the moment here and be present with my mm-hmm. animals who had, you know, myself who had gone through this. But I noticed
yeah.
after, you know, I kind of got organized and then I started doing research. It was interesting mm-hmm. because, you know, the next few days have been, you know, standard business times and doing errands and all the rest of it. But I began to realize that the topic we have for tonight is, mm-hmm. is this deity Anubis is so incredible that, you know, to work with, because he works with transformation and transition. Mm-hmm. And without it being in an ugly, frightening way, mm-hmm. but being able to help. So I look forward to our whole program and mm-hmm. how this is going to kind of formulate, because it was like this is an energy pattern that mm-hmm. would be helpful for us in transition time, especially. And, you know,
yeah.
here's our living experience is that we're talking about being able, mm-hmm. when we do our transitions, to be able to see the differences and to be able to be at peace.
Mm-hmm.
on what we, you know, how we go about things rather than throwing tantrums like, you know, children that we didn't
it's
get
so
our
much
way.
Energy wasted. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll turn it back over
yeah.
to you because, you know, at this point, I know we have a whole topic we're dedicating right now. And I want to get into
yeah.
it.
yeah, yeah. I love how you brought up that one of his roles of transition and how it is pretty applicable to the modern
yeah.
Day things that are going on. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm just going to start out here by talking about, you know, kind of defining or giving a little background on who's the deity Anubis.
Mm-hmm.
So Anubis is an ancient Egyptian deity and a god of the afterlife. Probably one of the most iconic Egyptian gods, and he is also one of the oldest Egyptian deities,
mm-hmm.
kind of born within the swirling sands of primordial chaos.
Mm-hmm.
His image, it's noted that his image first appeared on temple and tomb walls beginning in the first dynasty of Egypt. So this kind of circa around 3000 BC. Mm-hmm. And so Anubis, his appearance, he appears as the jackal-headed deity. And today I believe that his mysterious pull is still felt all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
He's a popular deity. And because dogs, jackals, and grave robbers would dig up freshly buried corpses,
mm-hmm.
to stop these desecrations, Anubis was called upon as the protector of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And he's noted as a very vigilant, very strong protector. He's known as the Egyptian god of the dead and as the right hand of Osiris. And today, Anubis really does remain like a popular deity and spirit ally among witches and spirit workers and pagans. Also the god of mummification and the god of death and the afterlife. He's also the god of divination, protection, curses, and justice. So it's interesting, the Egyptian priests who performed mummification would invoke Anubis during their death rituals. And so it's thought that he always, you know, was the overseer of the process.
Mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of meaning layered literally and figuratively into the process of mummification. So with this background, Anubis is believed to be the son of Osiris and Nephthys. And although that's the most common one, because there's older myths that say that he's actually older than these presumed parents, but I'm going to go with the most common one. And so the most common origin story say that Nephthys, the sister of Isis, and the wife of Set, became enamored with Osiris, who was the husband of her sister Isis. Okay, so this is where things get kind of messy. While Nephthys was trying to conceal her affair or her lust, she transformed herself to resemble Isis and seduced Osiris. And then this union resulted in the birth of Anubis. So when Isis discovered the truth about Anubis's parentage, she was a little pissed. Mm-hmm. But instead of harboring the resentment, Isis extended her compassion to Nephthys. And it's said that Nephthys felt remorseful, and she also feared Set, her husband Set's wrath, and she asked Isis for help. And so together, Isis and Nephthys concealed the infant Anubis in the marshes, and they kept him hidden from Set's knowledge. And Isis really became a prominent figure for Anubis because she cared for him like her own child. And this led to Anubis becoming a faithful follower of both Isis and Osiris. And so we have, you know, this deity Anubis was basically kind of like the bastard or the forbidden son of Osiris and Nephthys. A lot of sources say that he came into existence cloaked in sleek obsidian fur. And this was as a manifestation of the jackal's cunning and the somber veil of the afterlife. So Anubis definitely stood out as a distinguished figure. You know, if we can just imagine like this jackal-headed figure silhouetted against the desert sun, he was this incredible being who carried the secrets of the afterlife. And so he did, you know, come to be known as the guardian and psychopomp of souls navigating that cosmic highway between the living and the dead. And he, you know, he truly embodied like the essence of duality because he stood posted at the crossroads, you know, at, like as a sentinel, you know, at the crossroads of life and death. And so it's believed that Anubis beckons to mortals when they're, by, you know, near the transition to step through the veil that separates the physical realm from the mysteries of the spirit realm and the afterlife. And, you know, in the story of Anubis, we see him evolve into more than just a deity. He also, like, becomes the dynamic personification of transition and transformation, which is one of his most major assets. Guiding souls through the shadow realms that connect our physical selves to the great beyond. And so some see him kind of like as the sacred conductor, you know, of the symphony of souls and helping them, you know, facilitating the passage between life and death or between mortality and the Duat or the underworld. And so in the Duat, Anubis is seen as the primary guide as he escorts the departed spirits through the tangled labyrinth and guides them towards the Hall of Truth where their souls will be judged by Osiris. Although, through it all, Anubis emerged as a prominent, like the you know, god of the psychopomps and defender of Mat, which is, or Mahat, which is the essence of cosmic order that exists and is intertwined within the essence of the universe. And so he, you know, being someone who is the guide in times of transition, that really makes sense that he would be so closely connected with that whole intertwined energy of the universe, which gives it order. So, yeah, I know there's more things about him, though. How about you, Elvira? What are some of your bits or thoughts about him?
Well, obviously, the one that we hear the most and, you know, gets is the weighing of the soul. Just you said all the things that I think would be what is important, because the weighing of the soul against the feather of Ma'at, which is a white feather, can be an ostrich feather, but a white feather, is, you know, of truth, is the end product of this whole transitional, you know, experience and all the other things that you have talked about. So I think that is something that in the Hall of Truth, he, you know, there is the this weighing of the soul, but it's also that he helps the soul through the transition of what happens if you are, you know, it is not as black and white, no pun intended, that, you know, if it's too heavy and, you know, they throw him to the, you know, the devourer, he helps them. They can go into a section of his temple area to readjust the process for being able to see where their, you know, mistakes, their areas that they faltered in. And I feel that at this point, that's really kind of, that's so important right now. It is beyond even thinking about it, because, you know, we all, because we are human, we all come through different things, and we are challenged. And so, you know, to live a good life, to live in, you know, would be one thing, but an exceptional life would be questionable, because there's too many things in our world that, you know, we falter on. And I think that the fact that he is, it's not like, I will get rid of you because you are no good, which is, you know, the concepts of a lot of, you know, religions that you don't have, you know, you don't follow the good thing, you're dead, you're gone, you're just, you know, you're lost to, you know, all eternity. Instead, it's more like, well, let's see what we can do to make this a little better and see where you can kind of, you know, atone for this without being, you know, running around carrying a huge stone on your back and, you know, being flailed. But he is very, very much one that I find about transition and transformation. And his card really is the death card in the tarot, which, again, is death and rebirth. That's another one of those things that you kind of look at.
Yeah.
So, you know, he has that aspect, the dual aspect of it. So I find that, you know, the information, you know, he has an offspring called, and I have called Kabicha. And, you know, he had his consort was Anput, I'm not sure. She was a jackal-headed goddess, you know, that helped him with, you know, the embalming and things. There are these things that are factual things that you can look at, but I'm looking at what is it that brings his deity aspect to the fore. And, you know, we chose this deity long before anything that was happening in our external world started happening. So I find it incredibly prophetic, if you want to say that, that this is where we're working. So, you know, I think I know we have about six, we got 3 minutes. So I'm going to turn this back to you, because you might have a few more things to say, but then you can you know, do the necessary thing for our our break. So I'll send it back to you.
Yeah, there's a number of things that we probably won't get to cover all the points about Anubis, but one of the ones that I like the most has to do with the whole transformation. And I think that some of that can be really linked to the story of Isis and her sister, Nephthys, where Osiris got torn apart and killed by his brother Set. And so they found and buried all of Osiris's pieces, which were 14, except for his phallus, which gave him new life. And so Anubis assumed the heavy responsibility of overseeing the transformation. And so right there, like, this whole story is about him taking all the different disparate parts of Osiris and helping to put him back together, which, I mean, what a great, you know, symbol for when, you know, when we fracture, when we, you know, splinter, when we're not as together as we want to be. So Anubis, you know, guided the sacred rituals that turned Osiris into the first mummy, basically. And this process mirrored the god's eternal vigil over the departed. And the story of that has echoed through time as Set thought to, you know, disrupt the cosmic order by usurping Osiris and preventing his revival. But we see Anubis become a determined and fierce defender of the divine state and the afterlife. So he protected Isis and Osiris by continuously, you know, challenging Set, Set's authority. And so that, you know, if you're looking for any, you know, spiritual alliance with a powerful deity for helping you pick up the pieces and bring things back together, you know, I believe Anubis would be your guy. So it looks like it's probably time for us to take a little break, but we will be right back just to kind of take a deeper look into who the deity Anubis is and maybe some simple ways of working with him. So we'll be right back. And break us away, Nagashiva.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
We're back.
we're not sticking our head through some doorway, are we, and saying
No. But we are back, and we are ready to dive back in. Elvira, can you just kind of lead us off here with some more of your thoughts about this deity?
Well, I mean, some practical things, like, you know, what are some of the herbs and stones and different things that we can start to use as physical connective energies with this deity. Of course, myrrh was used in embalming, and so it's, you know, purification and transition. And so that's another, that's something that can be burned. If you can use the oil, you know, in terms of that. Frankincense was also used in embalming. So, you know, in terms of that representing a more spiritual. Yeah, I didn't know that, spiritual elevation. I mean, I'm like, wow, okay. You know? Then, you know, you have things like juniper, mugwort, bay leaves, cypress, and of course, yeah, I know, cypress, of course, was, you know, basically associated with literally moving into the afterlife. And it was, you know, one of those things that he, that it was part of the, if I'm not mistaken, it was, there was, that cypress tree is part of what is like the transitional area between, you know, to go the doorway. That's kind of like an opening for the doorway. And, of course, you have all kinds of things, crystals like obsidian, of course, and black tourmaline. Then you kind of add things like garnet, amethyst, labradorite, and, you know, then, of course, you've got
all the
hematite.
Ones I like.
I know. These are like, you know, smoky quartz and carnelian and, you know, so there's a lot of these that are part of it. And, I mean, I could go into, you know, like each one has its moment of, you know, in, you know, like working on, you know, an area. But all of these are part of protection, strength, keeping you grounded, using, you know, courage, you know, working on, you know, enhancing your ability to move between the worlds, kind of a thing. And I found that, since both Deb and I love stones, I mean, herbs are a part of our love, but stones were, I was like sitting here with all these going, these are the ones I love, and, you know, I have a consistent base. So obviously the other part is that we work, you and I work, with helping people through transitions, whether it's readings or candle work, or, you know, any kind of cleansing, things that, of, you know, all the things we're working with this deity, even if we're not, we are, you know, we do not call on him, we are working with his intent of what he's there for, which I found, you know, incredibly exciting. And so I know those are some of the things I'm trying to look. You know, I know there's a couple of, we have symbols, of course, the Ankh, which is, you know, the symbol of life, but it, you know, it has this process of, you know, preservation of the eternal life for the deceased, as opposed to just life, you know, in the real world. And then they have, of course, the scale, which we understand why. And they also had... like, it's called a Waz scepter, which is a symbol of power, very much like the flail, which, of course, we, you know, the picture that was chosen for our promo show announcement, the flail is, you know, one of the symbols along with scepter that you will see as power, that's representing the aspect of power. And,
Elvira.
Yes.
Elvira, what is a flail?
A flail. Okay. This takes you to another part of the world. Okay. It is basically a rod, and at the end of it, now a long time ago it was wood, so it would just be a stout piece of wood, and they would put leather strips. It would be attached to it. And flails were basically what, you know, when you talk about flailing people, mm-hmm. it's like flailing them or flailing, mm-hmm. Getting animals to go. It's kind of like a mini-tentacled whip. And but
okay,
it's a flail, so it has that thing. Now they got a little bit more glitzy when they would take it, and it would be a metal rod, and it would have mm-hmm. these pretty, you know, like dangly things that would come down, mm-hmm. like strings of beads or something like that. And it would be the ritual part of it rather mm-hmm. than the actual usage part. Now some mm-hmm. of the different religions / mm-hmm. Wiccan traditions, you use the flail, and it's mm-hmm. symbolic of being whipped, but not whipped mm-hmm. like in a bad way. It's letting go. It's like beating out the bad
like
energy.
SBDM or anything like that.
Right. Not like, yeah, you know, yeah. Not any of that. But it's set up mm-hmm. to rid the energy, the negative energy.
Yeah.
So kind of like if you were lying on your back and you were slapping the back a little bit, you know, like not mm-hmm. pounding it, but slapping it.
Yeah.
And like when we start to slap our arms and stuff, mm-hmm. sometimes to get the energy moving,
mm-hmm.
that's the same kind of thing that the flail was used for in practicality, mm-hmm. in ritual, and then, you know, as a symbol. So, yeah, that was kind of a sidebar, but yeah, and you know, there are other things like the canopic jars, which of course held mm-hmm. the organs and were preservation and protection, and then the funerary mask, which is, you know, basically mm-hmm. the mask that would be worn as a way to associate death and, you know, afterlife. And a lot of times the priest that did the mummifications would put on a jackal-faced mask for a representation of Anubis and working in that way. So
mm-hmm.
those are the how-to kind of a thing. And
mm-hmm.
I was looking at, you know, some of it talked about what are the modern-day Wicca and pagan usages for, you know, working mm-hmm. with Anubis. And we touched mm-hmm. briefly, both in our introduction and, you know, our mm-hmm. talking, but it's to navigate personal journey and to bring about transformation
mm-hmm.
and to find solace in the face of life transitions. Now, you tell mm-hmm. me that is not something which would be well utilized in some mm-hmm. form with what is going on.
Oh,
because,
hell yeah.
You know. It's about manifesting positivity. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, the tarot card I mentioned, which is, you know, transformation, mm-hmm. endings of a phase, not just of a life, and then a beginning. So
mm-hmm.
you have different things that modern Wicca and pagans have, you know, kind of utilized him. I mean, not embalming, actually,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, being able to be guided into a new positive existence, shedding
mm-hmm.
the old habits, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought of, you know, any kind of shift and change,
mm-hmm.
whether
yeah.
or not you want it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when my husband died, it was a transition, and it was shedding an old life and beginning a new life. Because of what was going on. And I think the mm-hmm. hardest thing I'm seeing with everyone, and of course I feel it a little bit too, is mm-hmm. we are shedding the old. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. the saying, make America great again. That is mm-hmm. so outdated because mm-hmm. there's no such thing as what America was when it was, quote, great at one time. We have a whole mm-hmm. new world out here. We have all these different things that are out there, technology and everything. We are in this other, so why don't we make America great now as opposed
mm-hmm.
to, you know, something in the past we can honor just like we honor the dead, but
mm-hmm.
we move forward into something new. And I guess in a way what I'm seeing is there's such fear of letting go of what we have known because we don't know what's happening, and that's why this deity is, mm-hmm. you know, so good at that, at helping mm. through that, because he actually is, you know, I don't want to say just kind, but understanding. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm going to let you go from here.
Yeah, well, transition, yeah, he's definitely the deity for transition and guidance. He also assumed the role of a very vigilant protector and guardian, mm-hmm. because he would keep a watchful eye over, you know, the sacred necropolises, which, you know, symbolize the earthly gateways to the afterlife. Mm-hmm. And even like when you look at his persona of the jackal-headed sentinel with the spiked ears mm-hmm. and the, like the ever alert and watchful eyes, you can see him guarding, you know, and you know, vigilantly standing and protecting against any shadows of, you know, malevolent intruders or any who would seek to disrupt these sacred grounds. And, you know, so he would protect against grave robbers and those with mm-hmm. evil or selfish intentions who wish to disturb the dead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and under his watchful guardianship, the departed mm-hmm. were granted safe passage. And so mm-hmm. that applies to the dead, but it also applies to the living. Because mm-hmm. A lot of people don't think about this part, but Anubis was also quite a warrior mm-hmm. and battled against Set and did a lot of things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that, you know, I think that when the other part is regarding like the funerary rites. So he was, you know, he is the guardian between the earthly and divine realms and was also like the director of rituals that kind of sealed the bridge between realms. And so, you know, many of the funerary rites that originated with Anubis are really wrapped in layers of symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is connected to his guiding influence at the gateway of death's door and the passage of souls. And so just I would think that any type of ritual or anything, any time that you're dealing with grief and letting go, I'm seeing that he would be, you know, a wonderful energy, a wonderful deity to tap into.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, if you, you know, if you want to work with Anubis, you know, just, it's always recommended, just like any other deity that we want to work with, is that we approach him with respect and just kind of find out all that we can about his story and what he mm-hmm. is about. And also come to understand our own intentions and the reasons that we would want to ally with them. I think that I've heard many people say that he is a wonderful deity to work with for seeking guidance when you're going through shadow work. And like you were talking about, you know, life transitions, you know, mm-hmm. dealing with loss, or working with spirits of the dead, you would find a significant ally in Anubis. Another thing I have seen pointed out is that if you are going to work with Anubis, that it's better to address him by his ancient name, which was, I think you mentioned it before, it was Anpu.
Mm-hmm.
Because the name Anubis came later on when the Romans adopted him. So it's best to kind of honor him by calling him Anpu and including any of his epithets, which aren't in Greek or anything. They're just epithets such as like conductor of souls, you know, or right hand of Osiris are a couple of common ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I think that you mentioned many items that are good to work with if you're trying to work with Anubis. A lot of really good crystals that I like, a lot of really good herbal types of things. You know, mm-hmm. So maybe get a base or knowledge of what some of those things are and create like a sacred altar or, you know, a sacred space for Anubis. And then you might, you know, maybe clean that space and place his image there. I've also heard that people, if you can't afford like a nice statue of Anubis, some people will put the figure of a dog, a canine, because he
mm-hmm.
is related to the, he loves all canines basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just, I don't know if you mentioned colors at all. I think the colors that
I didn't.
Okay. The colors that I saw for like maybe candles are like black, red, and gold are
mm-hmm.
said to be favored.
Mm-hmm.
And we might leave offerings to him just to show him our desire to work with him. He is said to favor things related to mummification, but, you know, that's, you have to get creative with that, I think. So that could be like maybe images or dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves things having to do with canines, you know, so, you know, jackals, dogs, or wolves. But, you know, the typical stuff like, you know, candles, incense, leaving out water or wine. I know one other thing I thought of is that when I am working with a deity, especially if I'm just trying to really establish that relationship with that deity, I'll try to pick like a regular time or the same day, and set that time to do like a little ritual or commune with that that deity. You know, like they say, well, one source that I saw said that he favors Tuesday, but I think, you know, it could be whatever day it works good for you, I think,
yeah.
And just, you know,
yeah.
just to do it routinely, because then each time you do it, I think it builds upon the energetic bond that you're forming with that deity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would like to break in. Part of it, the more traditional offerings
mm-hmm.
to him were bread and beer.
Oh, really?
So,
oh, bread and beer.
Yeah. Yeah, bread and beer. I thought that was kind of, because you said wine, and we always think
yeah.
of wine. And I'm like,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
yes, but I better mention bread and beer, because those were things that, you know,
yeah.
they pointed out in one of the areas I was reading and, you know, talking
mm-hmm.
about. But, yeah, bread and beer. So I thought that I would add that quickly to you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I saw other suggestions are, you know, doing things like outside of that, you know, the whole sacred space and stuff like that, is you might want to explore or gain a greater understanding of Anubis by going to a mummy exhibit or going to, you know, a museum where they have an ancient Egyptian artifact exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Anubis, you know, being the jackal-headed god, it said that when Nephthys kind of abandoned him, that wild dogs aided the search and led Isis to the infant Anubis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's said that he will smile upon anyone who donates time and energy to working with dogs or canine wildlife. So you might want to spend some time at your local, you know, humane society or donate
mm-hmm.
a little time or money to the care of dogs and shelter or rescue, you know, in honor
mm-hmm.
of Anubis.
And
yeah.
also, you know, adoption, you know, they call them orphanages, and I don't know if we use that term anymore, but, you know, working
okay.
with those that have been abandoned you know, in one form or another, I think is another way, because he was abandoned. But, you know, that giving of that time, you know, in terms of caring and, you know, exhibiting that, you know, aspect will get, I think, people closer, you know, for him to feel, you know, strongly about it. And, you know, the wildlife process is just as easy to, you know, work with, you know, that as well. So you're right.
Yeah. That's like, yeah, that's actually an extra beautiful way to do something like that. So he, you know, he's just great for like calling on, or, you know, for guidance, for going through transitions, for protection, for shadow work. And for divination. He's supposed to be very, very wonderful deity energy to work with in doing divination.
That's true. Interesting is part of one of the things that I was looking at is, you know, going to a cemetery and just putting flowers on a grave, you know, cleaning up a grave area, or, you know, meaning something that you're honoring the dead. Now, you're dead maybe, but, you know, obviously they're, you know, we may have moved away from where our family's cemetery plots are, or they may have been, you know, cremated and their ashes, you know, scattered, or, you know, there are different things about personal stuff, but in terms of that other aspect, and I thought that was really very interesting, because, you know, when you see a veteran during, like, the honoring of Veterans Day and everything, you know, putting a flag at a veteran's gravesite, or, you know, I mean, something where maybe the family no longer is around here, and you do that. I think that's another very meaningful way to connect and to get closer in terms of, you know, his seeing you're honoring the dead, not just asking for something.
Yeah, and there's actually this little graveyard that's, like, right in the middle of a very urban area where there's a shopping center and a bunch of different little clinics and just stuff all around. And it's not, like, it's only a mile or two from me. And so there's this little sweet little cemetery that's in the middle of all this. And it's like when you walk into it, you kind of almost feel like you're in a whole different little realm there, because it's so, the energy is so different. But I've gone there a few times and have kind of adopted, you know, a couple of the graves in there where, you know, I'll set flowers or other little offerings, coins or whatever on the stones. But yeah, I think that that's a really sweet way to just show, you know, appreciation and just, you know, put your energy into something that's just caring for something for someone else, you know.
Well, it's interesting. I know we're getting, I think, closer, but not so close, but closer. He is, you know, one of the things that I thought was really interesting is they talk about he being also working with him as a road opener. And, of course, as we know, the road opener candles and herbs and, you know, oils and things that Lucky Mojo makes, and they're, you know, are available, you know, for that, is that you work with Anubis on that. I just, when it said road opener, I mean, my mind just went,
you know,
oh, I know that
makes
area.
Because he helps navigate the labyrinth of the, you know, of the afterlife to get to the Hall of Truth. And that would make a lot of sense. And I also saw that, like, Anubis and the wolf-headed, I think it's pronounced Wet-to-Wet, whose name means opener of the ways, is a deity of war and royalty and funerary rites, much like Anubis, and they are both psychopomps and allies. And so, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you brought that up about the road opening.
Yeah.
It does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, kind of interesting. How close are we to our time, darling?
We've got 3 minutes before we sign off here. So, I'm kind of looking at, do you have any final thoughts about working with Anubis?
You know, it's interesting. There is a sanctuary here, a very big one. I won't go into all of the drama behind its existence, but it is called Turpentine. Turpentine Sanctuary. Anyway, it's got, you know, their rescue large cats and, you know, all kinds of things that people have bought and, you know, proceeded to realize that they were not going to work well, or they were maltreated or malnourished. And then they also have bears and dogs. And, you know, going there and offering, you know, to help out, or even going and, you know, maybe supporting them by, you know, buying, you know, an item, or not to, to help them, because they're always, you know, looking for donations as well as actual help. And I think there are other places throughout the United States and in people's areas that they have similar things, and maybe it's wildlife. I know that Sonoma County, there was a wildlife bird rescue and, you know, an animal rescue that you can go to and put some time and energy or help financially with a small donation.
Oh, that's excellent. That's an excellent thought, and a good way to just, you know, put that energy out there into, you know, kind of passing it on, because of all the benefits you can get from making an alliance with Anubis. I love that. So I know we have to kind of wrap up now, so I will end here with just giving some contact information for both of us. So for readings or root work, you can find Elvira and I on Hulu Psychics and on AIR, the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. And you can also find Elvira online at www.elvira.com. And you can find her also at www.milk-and-honey.com. And you can find me on my website at www.bewitchingbee.com. And so this was great. I you know, you're so right about it being a lot of our topics end up being so timely, even though we, you know, kind of plot out, you know, quite a while ahead of time, like, oh, yeah, let's do this one. No, it just seems like, you know, that whole thing with transition is perfect.
right. That's true.
yeah. So, thanks. I have to mention also that next week, Thursday, we will continue this month's theme of gratitude for the dead with the topic honoring our dead. Tie right in. And
no
so,
kidding.
So for now, we'll say goodbye. And until next time, our magical friends, witch on, witch well, and witch wisely.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Black Friday is coming. And for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year, too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit Bartesian.com/cocktail. That's BARTESIAN.com/cocktail.